Good morning, my friends. Welcome back. You are listening to the fourth and final hour of what we like to call the fastest 4 hours in talk radio, Frankly Speaking Radio. And I'm your host, Frank Whalen. Glad you're here with us today. Always a treat, and it is a rarity because he's just crazy busy, but he has generously given us some time today, and I'm insanely grateful. Martin Zender is with us. Martin, welcome back.
Thank you, Frank.
You know, at some point, we got to give out all your information, book titles, website. I know there's probably an 800 number to call and order the book. It's available everywhere as well. So anytime you want to do that, man, we can do that.
All right. Well, we'll do that before we close because there's some big changes coming on the website.
Okay.
People have been complaining to me. They said, your website never changes. I said, well, that's a fact. But we got some big changes coming up that people are going to get excited about.
Sounds good.
Yeah. But going back to this verse, 1 Corinthians 2:14, I really do think that this is what caused people to think that nature is evil and we must squash human nature. That's why the Catholic Church forbids men to get married. It's evil to have sexual desires. It's evil to eat certain foods. It's evil to drink wine. You still have the Baptists today. They won't let you drink wine. They won't let you dance or play cards or have any kind of fun whatsoever. Because it's nature. You want to do that, and so it must be wrong because the natural man is not receiving the things which are of the Spirit of God. Well, the Greek word here that was translated nature in the King James Version is psychikon, where we get the psych, and it's the soulish. Now, the soulish man, I'm reading from the Concordant Literal New Testament now, the soulish man is not receiving those things which are of the Spirit of God. Let me explain that. The soulish man is the person who is ruled mainly by his five senses rather than the spirit. The soul is your perception of the world. It's your feelings. And it's everything we receive from sight, touch, taste, smelling, those five senses. And so it's this man who's not receiving, the man who's more interested. And it's not the fact that he's a man by nature. Human nature is not evil. Okay, human nature itself is not evil because God made us the way we are. Human nature has been beset by sin and by death. We are dying every day, and that has definitely put human nature at a disadvantage. Human nature can't do what it wants to do. This interesting verse in Romans, this is going to be clear to everybody here. Paul says that whenever they of the nations that have no law by nature may be doing that which the law demands, these are a law unto themselves. In other words, here's people who never knew what the law of Moses was. They never heard that thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that. Yet by nature, they were doing the things that the law commanded. They were already loving their neighbor. They were not committing adultery. Even though they never heard the command not to, by nature, they did the things of the law. This tells you that nature, the natural man, is in line. This is going to really rock some boats. Human nature is in line with God, but because we're dying, because we all wake up and feel like crap, because we sin, human nature can't do what it wants to do. It's the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak type of thing. The flesh isn't bad, it's just weak. You see what I'm saying? It's not bad, it's just weak. It can't do what it wants. And so human nature itself, though, these impulses God gives you are generally good. It's just when they're corrupted, perhaps, by the fact that we're dying. But wanting to eat.
That makes sense.
Wanting to have sex.
Yeah.
Wanting to sleep in on Sunday. Completely natural to sleep in on Sunday. God himself sleeps in on Sunday.
Uh-oh.
Yes, God sleeps in on Sunday, so you should too.
Hang on.
Sunday's not even the Sabbath, my man.
I know it.
The Sabbath
is
Saturday. They're all screwed up.
I know. It's in any calendar you look at, too, I'll tell you that, too. Stay with us here, folks. We'll be right back with more Frankly Speaking Radio after this. Welcome You're listening to Thursday's edition of Frankly Speaking Radio. I'm your host, Frank Whalen. And if you've been to the website, franklyspeakingradio.com, you've probably noticed our webmaster, James, has updated it with information on our guest, Martin Zender. His website is martinzender.com. That's MARTINZENDER.com. And he'll talk about that more later. You can, of course, email him through that site. You can read and interact. You can send him an email. It's incredible. And, of course, you'll see the products that he has available. Again, the books are just amazing. The audio is amazing. This guy's, you know, he certainly, I think he does, he represents God well. And I think that God will always take care of somebody like that. So, Martin, welcome back to the show, brother.
Thanks, brother. I'd like to thank everybody for listening, too,
For
giving me the time of day. I really appreciate that.
Well, I was just talking to the producer, and he's just like, this guy's amazing. He goes, it's so nice to, you know, there's a lot of hatred in religion. And people mistake, of course, religion always with faith, and they equate hatred then with God or judgment, if you will. I came across something, I think it was Psalms 1, and I don't know if you got your Bible handy. I meant to bring mine, and I did not, but I was reading that today, and it said something like, like I said, you'll probably find it before I can butcher it. But
I'm looking for it right now.
Okay.
So butcher away.
All right. It basically says something like, blessed is the man who...
who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked.
And?
Nor stand in the path of sinners.
Ta-da!
Nor sit in the seat of scoffers.
I thought, how amazing is that? Because that basically shoots a hole in all organized religion right there.
Ooh,
don't you think?
That was a blow there.
Yeah, but it's a truth.
Let me read this again. How blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the path of sinners. So you're turning the whole thing on its head and saying that the wicked and the sinners and the scoffers there, nor sit in the seat of scoffers.
Yeah.
That those are the people sitting in the pews.
Well, they are, because the scoffers are scoffing at all the other religions who don't have it right, whereas they do. They're buddy-buddy. Let's all shake hands. Peace be with you. Yeah, we got it going on, and these idiots outside, boy, they're all going straight to hell.
I can see somebody coming past the church, and somebody gestures to the pew and says, sit here, brother. We want you to join our... I'm not sitting in the seat of scoffers. That's not a pew. It's a seat of scoffers. I'm not going there.
Well, and then look at this. He stands not in the way of sinners. I mean, that's like, and I always get crap for this, Martin, but I stand by it. A lot of people I know they just want to go after the homosexuals, and they're like, the Lord says, and they're hitting them with Bibles. You need to repent, sinner, and all that stuff. And I've always said this: it ain't my sin. If it's a sin, it ain't my sin. I'm not doing it. So therefore, who am I to go out there and just and point fingers and accuse you of this and accuse you of that? If people are going to sin, let them sin. Because you know what? I am not going to be judging them. Because I'm not casting any stones. Because then stones will be thrown at me. So I'm not even going to play that game. So
here's the thing too, Frank, that the word sin, you know, it's not just a moral flaw. We always think of it as something obvious that people talk about, like smoking, drinking, homosexuality. You back up and look at the meaning of the word. It's to miss the mark. When a basketball player misses a free throw, he sins. I mean it. That is the base root meaning of the word, to miss the mark, anything that falls short of perfection. These people sitting in the pew, i.e. the seat of scoffers, they're missing the mark totally about God's nature, about who he is. They're misrepresenting him. I thank you very much for what you said about me, that I'm a good representation of God. Now, I try to put the right face on God to undo all this lies people have been telling about him over the years. He's waiting to crush you. So I appreciate you saying that.
Well, it's the truth. Well, I mean, you can choose to view it in a couple of ways. And again, I think that those benchmarks of real faith are trust and forgiveness. Now, you could say love, too, because they're all kind of tied up together. But, I mean, not like the hippie love and not like the New Age movement love, because they're just like... You
That's
know,
emotional want... love.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's completely different.
It's soulish. That goes back to the word we just read
right
in 1 Corinthians, soulish, yeah.
Excellent point. And, you know, like I said, it's... I think that... there, and I've said this, too, just recently even... In my opinion, it's really easy to be bad. And I know this. I know from the misses that I've had in my past that I have an infinite capacity to be good at being bad. And I don't want to do that. I know it's harder to walk this walk. I know it's maybe doesn't pay off the same way it does. You know, the other side, they have that whole instant gratification thing. They get whatever they want, and they get it as soon as they want it. And that's what sucks them in and drags them deeper. And that's fine. I don't want any part of that. I know it's supposed to be hard. And as a result of that, I take it a step further and I say, because the walk is hard, God should be easy. Don't you think? I mean, it's easy to love God. It's easy to be wherever he wants you to be. It's not always easy to stay there and to endure what it takes, but to get there,
it's a paradox.
It should be a clearly marked path.
It's a paradox because as you were saying that, I'm reminded of Jesus' words saying that my burden is light. That's a paradox. My burden,
yeah.
take my yoke upon you. When you think of yoke, you think, oh man, this thing's got a big wooden thing on my neck. I'm getting strapped up to it. But then he says it's light and it's easy. So that's exactly what you're talking about. It's hard in the sense that you're going against the grain over your friends and everybody that you know. You have this peace. And yet at the same time, you feel like you felt when you woke up this morning. I feel good. For some strange reason, everything around me screaming hell, screaming that things are falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the sins of those people in the pew, i.e. the seat of scoffers. I like this. I'm glad you brought this verse up. They're sitting there, and it doesn't look like they're doing anything wrong because they're just sitting there. They're not sinning, are they? They're just sitting there. But to me, somebody who is in that is aligning themselves with the party line of the church, which has so many things wrong concerning God. They've missed the mark big time when it comes to God. Do you think that's a bad thing? My gosh, they're saying God's going to, you know, damn most of humanity. They're saying that your salvation is up to you, whether you believe or not. It's your faith, not Christ. It's your faith that's going to save you. And if you don't do things right, God is going to damn you. They're so misrepresenting God. That is sin. That is missing the mark. I think that's worse than homosexuality. My gosh, they're dissing the creator of the universe. They're telling lies about him. They're saying the opposite of the truth. And where is it happening? In the seat of scoffers. I mean, that was remarkable. You taking this verse and turning the tables, and the Christians will say, well, that's all the other sinners. And we're looking at them and saying, what about you?
Mm-hmm.
What about you? Apply this to yourself. What are you saying about God?
Absolutely.
Man, that's great.
Well, you know, think about it. People try to have like sort of a comfortable God. They have a God that's either really, really nice, and I know that he is, and I'm not saying that, but I mean, they're talking about the free love hippie God, you know?
Right.
That's not the right God, but then they also are like, God isn't as strong as we say he is. I mean, he is, but he's not. God needs me to go out there and preach to people. He needs me to go out there and point fingers and say, you need to do this, and you need to do that. They go out there and say, hey, you know, we need to make sure we're on the straight and narrow, because at any given moment, Satan could swoop in here and do this and this and this. And they completely miss the point, and they're taking away power from God. And I'm saying, and even the people who don't believe in predestination, they're like, well, you know, God is, you know, anything can happen. And I'm like, well, how can that be? If I turn left to go to work instead of right, does God run down to his big, you know, studio in the sky and break out the blueprints and redo the whole grand design of the universe I screwed it up with a choice?
No. Well, Frank, if you could screw up God's plan, I would shop for another deity. That's not God. That's not God. If Frank Whelan or Martin Zender can screw up his plan, I mean, who are we? Who are we? Mm-hmm. And you and I were talking about sin a lot, and there's probably people listening that would think, man, these guys are awful cavalier about failing, about missing the mark. Actually, no. But what we're banking on is the fact that when Jesus Christ hung on that cross, he did something with sin. Namely, took it away. He took away the sin of the world. And people call me crazy for believing that, because they're still telling me that sin is going to stand in the way of people coming to God. Oh, well, you don't understand. He's a drunk. You don't understand. He's a sinner. Okay, that's bad, and that carries consequences on this earth. You're going to have a hard life. People are going to, you know, you're going to make a hard way for yourself. But Jesus Christ took away the sin of the world. Mm-hmm. Something happened since Calvary. It's almost like by bringing these sins back, well, wait a minute. And you were talking about God being nice God?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he has to judge sin. And people are always telling me that, oh, Martin, you know, God has to judge sin. He has to judge sin. I think he did that 2,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but I think when Jesus was there suffering when God withdrew from him, and when they beat him and spit on him, I somehow think that he was taking on the sins of the world, and that he took them down to the grave with him, and he raised up without him. Now, how are you telling me that sin is going to still stand in the way? My gosh, you might as well slap the Savior in the face. He went to take away all the sin of the world, and he suffered, and he died, and he took it all, and he was fighting Satan for 6 hours on that cross.
Mm-hmm.
The worst 6 hours in the history of the universe. And now we're sitting here, well, you still sin's going to keep you from God. And he advertises coming for sin.
Yeah.
God, give me a break. That angers me.
I know.
That angers me. You talk about missing the mark.
Yeah.
You're not even in the ballpark. You're not even in the parking lot of the ballpark. You're not within 10 miles of the stadium to be saying that stuff. I'm not recommending people sin because you're going to have problems in this life.
Right.
But to say that it's going to keep you from God when God himself sent his son to take it away.
Yeah.
Get a clue.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's really the big thing about it. You know, I like to watch movies, and you and I have talked about some of them in the past. You know, I was watching Bruce Almighty a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay, it's a funny movie, but
in a way.
Yeah, but you know, there's a scene in there where Bruce has God's powers, and he tries to make his girlfriend fall in love with him, and Morgan Freeman, who plays God, who's on hiatus, basically says, that whole free will thing can't make somebody love you. And I thought, you know, that is an amazing thing, because God probably could, but he doesn't force us to love him.
Let's talk about that when we come back.
Stay with us, folks.
Might be wrong about that.
You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I'm your host, Frank Whalen. Our guest today, Martin Zender, prolific writer. And again, my friends, go to his website, martinzender.com. That's MartinZender, or just write it down, Zender, Zender. Go to your bookstore and say, what do you got from this guy? I guarantee you, it's going to blow your mind in a good way. It's very freeing, I think, to see these things. And this is what we said yesterday on the show. In order for people to connect, sometimes you got to collide. And it's okay to shake things up. It's okay to challenge yourself in the belief structures that you have. Because maybe you didn't come by them honestly. Maybe you thought you did, but you didn't quite get there. Somebody said something to you. You know, somebody took advantage of you when you were in a very weak state or something, or whatever the case may be. You married somebody who has a certain belief, and you just kind of, over time, it became your own. Ask questions, and then you'll find truth. And Martin Zender, bringing the truth to us today. Thanks, buddy. I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, you're welcome. Hey, is that Ken, that's the producer that's picking the songs for the bumper music there?
Why, you want some funk?
I want to compliment him for the last one.
Yeah?
Yeah, really, I thought the lyrics were great. So I'm about freedom and revolution.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's what I want to see. I want to see revolution. I think we're beyond the stage where we need a reformation. I don't think the institution can be reformed. And I think anybody that goes in, and I'm just telling people right now, if you're excited by these truths, the first thing you're going to want to do is go tell your friends and tell your pastors. And I've seen this so many times. Wow, I just heard a liberating message. God's greater than we thought, and you think it's going to be received. Oh, this is the best news we've ever heard. And they throw a wet blanket over you, and it's terrible. It feels awful. And the first thing you want to do is try to reform the system, but the system's far gone. The best thing you can do is get yourself out of it, because then you're going to be apart from the influences. that have disquieted you in the first place and dragged you away from God. Actually, you know, it's the craziest thing, but you think that the place to go if you want spiritual enlightenment is go to church. And the opposite is true. It reminds me of the time that my wife, we had our two of our kids at home. She gave birth at home, and we were in the hospital visiting somebody. So we had a bad experience with my first one in the hospital. And when my second one was about to be born, she was 9 months pregnant. We're in a hospital visiting somebody, and she goes, "Oh, I think I felt a pain. Hurry up, get this woman out of the hospital." That's not usually what you hear when a woman's pregnant. It's just like, it's the opposite of what you think. Rush to the hospital? No, we were at the hospital. We rushed home because my wife was about to have a baby.
Wow.
Rush this woman home.
Yeah.
Get her away from this place.
Get her out of this church.
Get her out of this church. If you want to understand God, get out like there's a fire in there. Run for the exit. They should point the exits out to you like an aircraft. When you go to church, you know, if you're seated near an exit, if we start to give you any hellfire sermons or guilt sermons, you know, please be aware of how to escape this vehicle.
Well, you know, we were just talking after the break, and I said that God doesn't make us love him, and you said that I might be wrong.
I colored over the lines there, didn't I? I noticed the music started, and I was still talking.
That's okay.
I colored over the lines, but I did that when I was in first grade, too. I never could stand the line. I'm still like that.
I know. I love that.
Okay, well, good. It's good. It's a good thing you do. Actually, you know, I heard James Dobson say this one time, and I'm still gagging over it. He said, God will not force himself on anyone. God will not force himself. In other words, at crunch time, at the hour of decision, it's up to you. Even Billy Graham has said this. He has said at altar calls, don't pray for these people now. It's beyond God's part. God's out of this. You know, I admire, at least he's consistent. Because that's the consistent message. At crunch time, when your eternal life is at stake, it's up to you. You know, boy, that's an honest presentation of the truth. It's not up to Jesus at that point. Well, gee, did he save me or not? Well, apparently not, because they're still talking about sin. They're still talking about you're not saved. Here's how to get saved. Apparently Jesus didn't save me. Back to James Dobson. God will not force himself on anyone. That is a heinous teaching. We don't realize, Frank, everything we do is because God has somehow forced himself on us. He has to break down our well-walled world in order to get the message through to us. You know how much we're free? We are free only to reject God. And Paul makes it very clear, Romans chapter 3, there is no one righteous, no, not one. There's no one seeking out God. No one is seeking God. So if God didn't intervene, no one would seek him. No one would ever be saved if God didn't intervene. The question is, does God force people to love him? Here's how he does it. I'm going to give you an example. A little parable here, okay? A little story. If there's a small child on a cliff crawling in peril and the mother is nearby, what would be the right thing to do? Do you rush the child and try to grab it as fast as you can and risk it reacting?
Mm-hmm.
Or does the mother simply lower her robe and expose her breast to the child? And the child is drawn to the mother's bosom. It's a drawing, and that is exactly the way God
does
it.
That's interesting.
God draws us to him.
Well, I know you'll keep us abreast of all this when we return from this break. Thank you. I'm master of the segue. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back with our guest today, Martin Zender.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Yeah.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I'm your host, Frank Whalen, and I see that we got a lot of calls coming in, a lot of questions. If we have time, we will do that. Absolutely. It's something I enjoy doing. I know it's something that our guest enjoys doing. But, of course, if you were unable to get through, I would encourage you to send Martin Zender an email. Tell him that he better come back on the show again really soon. And, of course, you can email him through his website, martinzender.com, of course. Obviously, you know who we're talking to, Martin Zender. Welcome back.
Thanks again, Frank.
I love having you here, man. I was just looking up something, not to derail where we were going with that, but we got a call from somebody wondering, saying that you had mentioned a passage on the air about God saying that he creates evil. And it's true, and I've had arguments with people about that before. People have called up and said, I can't believe, how can you say that? Isaiah 45:7. So
right.
It's right there. I mean, you can't. It's not like God saying, well, you know, sometimes you might be able to construe it that I might have a hand in some evil possibly being created. It just says, I create evil. So.
Yeah. Here's the context, Frank. It's Isaiah 45, starting with verse 5. I am the Lord. There is no other. Besides me, there is no God. I will gird you, though you have not known me, that men may know from the rising to the setting of the sun that there is no one besides me. I am the Lord. There is no other. The one forming light and creating darkness, causing well-being, creating evil. I am the Lord who does all these things. And the thing is, that's the thing. I will gird you, though you have not known me. People don't know a lot of things about God, but it doesn't make it untrue.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that the only way people can come to terms with a God who creates evil is if evil has a constructive purpose.
Sure.
And that is not the message of Orthodox Christianity. Evil, there's going to be some cauldron of evil that's going to exist eternally in opposition to God,
mm-hmm.
in spite of his best work to that, not have that happen. It's going to happen anyway. There's going to be a portion of the universe forever that's out of his control. That's the, quote, good news.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you need to open the exit and say, lower the chute. Men, women and children and Catholics first. Get out of here.
Absolutely.
Because that is a killer message.
Yeah.
That's a killing message. And then they tell you to go in peace, to love and serve the Lord. Yeah,
oh,
right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
How do I do that?
It's a shot to the jugular and a walk to the emergency room. It's just you can't sustain faith when you're just. I don't know. You're just bleeding everywhere. I mean, it doesn't.
That's right.
You can't hold it in because it's not real, because it can't be held. And that's why when you look at it honestly, then it all starts to fall into place. And again, it becomes a little easier. And it boils down to that predestination thing. I read something else, too, and I think it was Psalms. You will probably know this. And again, I don't know where it is. But the gist of it was something like, I offer to you a free will sacrifice. And I thought, that's what it is. So it's like, you know, like you said, in the context of intelligent praying, you're saying to God, your will be done. And that's kind of the same thing with this. You're saying, hey, look, you know, you give me free will. Hey, I appreciate that. I'm giving it back to you. I'll do whatever you tell me. I want to do this. I want this. You know, I know it's not going to be easy all the time, but this is something I want to do with my time here. And I mean, it's a hard decision to make, but if the rewards, they may not be the same that you may think, but it is incredibly rewarding.
Well, actually, God didn't give us a free will to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I have to correct you there.
Okay.
Just because I think it's important. It's almost like God gives us these things. People, this is the way I used to understand it. And then he gives us this thing. He expects us to give it back to him.
Mm-hmm.
And people at least, people at least have to call on God. Well, you at least have to ask for faith. Well, let me ask you this. What does it take to ask something of an invisible being? It takes faith just to do that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
To ask an invisible being. So they say, well, you don't need faith, sure. But you at least have to have the faith to call on God.
Mm-hmm.
But the shocking thing is, Frank, if we don't even have the faith necessary to call on God. I'm saying we have nothing to bring to the table. God God has given us everything, but it would be contradictory to say that he has given us a free will, because there's only room for one free will in the universe. The word free is real problematic there. Because, you see, if God truly gave everybody a free will, then instantly he is unable to mess with it.
Oh, I see.
You see?
Yeah.
If he gives it away, he doesn't have it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that would be the biggest disaster of the universe if God decided to give everybody a free will and then hoped he could woo everybody to give it back to him. And then he has to try like heck, but that person in the end could refuse it because God cannot influence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's remember, the word free means that there's no influence.
Mm-hmm.
It's free of all influence. And that is it.
I see what you're saying.
Right, right.
Well, then, what would you...
I can't wait for this question. Go ahead.
No. I'm just wondering, where do people get that from then?
They get it from that they really want man to have a free will.
Okay,
they really want.
There's no
basis for it. No,
okay.
Absolutely not. There's scripture against it. That's the last thing people will give up. Oh, my God. It's like you taking their underwear, their last stitch of clothing.
No,
They will tear at that.
Yeah.
We're not giving this up. You cannot tell me that there's just one little grain of sovereignty I have. Damn it, I can refuse this or I can accept it. You know, they're not going to be willing to say that God has to bust down your walls in order to give you faith. He has to bust down your walls to give you faith.
Mm-hmm.
You're not coming to God of your own free will. You can't. It's impossible. I know that from Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
Or, as I said, Romans 3, no one is seeking out God. Going back to James Dobson, God won't force himself on anyone. BS. He has to do it 24/7 just to get you to do anything.
Mm.
You know, Paul said this when he was on Mars Hill, in him we live and move and are. That's the literal version. King James says live and move and have our being. In him we live and move and are. Well, some people say, I'm willing to admit we live in God. Okay, but what if I tell you that you move? What if I tell you you can't move?
Yeah.
Without God. Well, I'd be harder to accept. Well, in him we live and move. Okay, I'm willing to concede that. But my very being, he can't. No, you are. We live, move, are. You see, as Paul is going on in this dramatic statement, he's tightening the bolts down even tighter. You live, move, and are in God. And Paul says in another place, what do you have that wasn't given you in the first place? And the reason he can't give you free will is because that would be a contradiction. Because that would then limit him. He could never again influence that person. And so he wisely does not give free will.
Hmm.
He gives wills.
Yeah.
And this is where I get in the argument all the time. I decide things every day. I certainly feel free. I could decide I wanted to take this car to work instead of that one, or eat this breakfast cereal instead of that one. But, we do make a lot of decisions, and we do exercise our wills. But none are free because we're all influenced, Frank. Everything you do is influenced by many, many invisible threads. Your heritage, your parents, your DNA, your genes, the weather, whether you're feeling good today, what your liver's doing, what's happening in the world. There's so many influences, and every decision you make is based on those influences. And it's a chain. And guess who is behind all influences?
Yeah.
If you guessed God, you're correct. God is the head of all influence. So to say that somebody is apart from God's influence is ludicrous. And if somebody would say they're free, I would challenge him, well, jump over your roof.
You know, that's so interesting because I was just looking at it, and I'm at blueletterbible.org, which I think is just a fantastic website, and I looked up free will sacrifice, and first I looked up free and free will, and it said something like there were two references, and it was like, I will go free, or something like that. There's no free will next to each other anywhere, apparently, in the whole Bible. But I looked at this, will and sacrifice, and Psalms 54:6 says, I will freely sacrifice unto thee. So
that's different.
Yeah,
right?
It's completely different.
Willing.
Yeah, and I have to check, you know, to see if I just remembered it incorrectly, because as I said, I didn't have it in front of me and I knew I'd screw it up. Or perhaps I have one of those. It's one of those occasions where people say, "Hey, the Bible contradicts itself." In which case, I would say, if you go back into the, you know, the roots of it, it doesn't. It's most likely a translation error.
Yeah, and you have to look at whether it's an absolute or a relative viewpoint as well. We can say that somebody is in jail and somebody's not in jail. Well, the person that's not in jail is free relative to the person that is in jail. That doesn't mean that they're free apart from God. okay, here's one person who willingly brought a sacrifice to God. Let's even call it a free will sacrifice. They brought this to God. This other person didn't. Okay, we're still not looking at the cause. One person looked to be willing, the other person was not, but it was God himself who put it on that person's heart to give that. So it always comes back to God. Mm-hmm. It's not absolutely free. I mean, yeah. You know, we live in a free country.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that goes against Martin's doctrine. See, we're free. Well, relative to other countries where they tell you what to do,
mm-hmm.
We're free in relation to those countries. Absolutely speaking, can you be free apart from God?
Right.
No, absolutely speaking, we're not free. So we don't make any decisions.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I know you are. And I know it's just a matter of defining our terms,
mm-hmm.
and setting the boundaries of our terms.
Well, you know, I was talking to one of our callers the other day, and what happened was I was talking about an ex-girlfriend of mine. And, you know, I remember her coming to me and saying, I don't know what to do. Tell me what to do. And I was like, oh, hell no. Like, I screw up my own life all the time. I certainly do not want to be accountable for yours. And as a result of that, I make mistakes, but I understand, given some time and some perspective, it's always, always, always for the right purpose, you know. You pray a certain way and you don't get it and you're like, well, damn it. And then, you know, a couple years later, you look back and you remember that prayer and you're like, man, I'm sure glad I didn't
get
that.
Thank God, God didn't just give me that because I wanted it.
Right. So, you know, at the time, I'm looking at it and I certainly don't want to be responsible for other people's mistakes. You got to make your own mistakes for that purpose. But it's for God's purpose for you, you know, whatever lessons you have to learn. Now, the idea of it actually getting, you know, less under my control, meaning my own situation, I'm thrilled with that.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What's the bad news with that?
There's none in my mind. A lot of people have these control issues. I do not. But you know, take it a step further. I mentioned about how God sort of breaks us down so he can lift us up even higher, and about how maybe the world is in that position.
That was great what you said.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that.
And I like to keep myself broken down. You know, honestly, because a lot of people say, you know, Frank, you could market your show differently. You could have some things to sell. You could do this. You could go and hustle for advertising and all that. And my take on it is, because if I start thinking for one second that I can affect my own life, that I can improve my situation through hard work, I'm spinning my wheels, man. I'm just going to go ahead and say, if it's meant for it to happen, if God's meant for me to have a job, I'll have a job. If he's meant for me to have money, I'll have money.
But you're not a fatalist either.
I'm not one of those people.
I don't want people to get the idea that, well, Frank doesn't work. It works, but, you know, I mean, you make it look easy, Frank.
Well, I appreciate it.
You make it look easy, but we all know you work hard.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I'm complaining about it every day.
Well, yeah. You bitch a lot about it.
Yeah, I do.
But we know that it's God working in you to work and to will. God is God in you. Philippians 2. 13, God in you, 2:12, I think, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It's God in you causing you to do these things. Mm-hmm. And we don't acknowledge that every second of every day. That's why this is a no-lose situation. People resent thinking that God's controlling me. But you know what? God is gracious in that he doesn't give us a consciousness of that 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
So he lets us feel as if we're acting of our own accord. Oh, I got to do this or I'm in trouble. I got to pay my bill or the thing or, you know, I think I'm going to have Gatorade today. And I think I'm going to choose the green instead of the orange. All these pleasant decisions that we make, what to eat, what to drink. You know, people think, that's ridiculous. Why are you talking about that? Just the simple pleasures of life. God allows us to think that we're in control of that. And he's like, he's petting our heads, you know. It's like, well, I'm not going to force you to think every second that I'm behind your every decision, but I am. And let me tell you when that comes in handy, when you screw up. You know, when you really make a big mistake in life, then you want to think, well, God's in control. Okay, I'm all right. God's in control. You don't want to think that when you're having fun in life, when you're making those little decisions every day that make you feel good. I'm glad I chose these socks. I really feel good in these, you know. I'm glad I had my hair cut this way. I look great, and they look like crap. It's all true. And you like to feel that you did something, and you worked. And God lets us feel that way. Go ahead and feel that way. The mistake is if you think you're acting sovereignly in that area, and that it's not influenced. But behind it all, God is causing you to choose green Gatorade over orange.
Mm-hmm.
He's that interested in the details. They say God's too busy running the universe. Geez, we're not talking about the president or the governor. We're talking about God. I think he can spin two balls at the same time. All right? He cares about what flavored Gatorade you choose, and he causes you to choose the right one.
Mm-hmm.
There's the right one and the wrong one in God's mind. But he doesn't give you a 24/7 consciousness of it, which makes you feel free, and people fall in the trap. Well, I feel free. I must be free. Mm-hmm. The same thing that the people thought who killed Jesus. They had no idea they were fulfilling the scriptures.
Right.
They
felt
free. They said, well, we're doing our own thing. We're going to squash God's plan. We're going to kill the Son. And
mm-hmm.
Jesus said, you can't do anything. He said this to Pontius Pilate, perfect example. You can't do anything to me unless it's given you from above.
Yeah.
Guess what? You feel free. You feel like you're under no insistence to act one way or the other. I got this. You're doing only my will. You're doing exactly my will.
Mm-hmm.
If you had told Pilate that, he'd laugh in your face. You're doing the will of God. The Jews are doing the will of God.
Satan.
Judas is doing the will of God.
Yeah.
Satan is doing the will of God. Let's go interview him, though, and ask him if they think they're doing the will of God. No, I'm God's biggest antagonist. What are you talking about? That's the beauty of it. God doesn't give us a consciousness of it so we can live like it's up to us. We can work hard and do things.
That's
but the
amazing.
Backstop is, the safety net is that when you screw up, then it's real convenient to think, well, it's God's fault, not mine. Okay, well, So we got the best of both worlds, Frank.
We really do. And, that's a brilliant point. And that should bring a lot of comfort to people who feel frustrated that they can't get certain politicians out of office, or they can't get certain foreign policy stopped, or they can't get certain legislation, squashed. And they said, why? And there's a reason. And that's what it is there, folks. And to me, that's good news. That's comforting. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Moments of the program here today, and what a dazzler it has been, courtesy in all part to Martin Zender, his amazing message, which again he'll attribute to God, and rightly so. Martin, welcome back.
You do have the fastest 2 hours in radio.
I have the fastest 4 hours, pal. You're only here for
2 hours. Oh my gosh! Well, it's fast for me. These 2 hours just go fast.
Yeah.
You were in the waning moments. I said, "What?"
Yeah, it's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to give just a minute or two here to this call because I think it's interesting. Kate is with us from New Jersey. Kate, welcome to the show.
Hi. It's been great listening to you two today.
Oh, well, thanks for listening.
Thanks.
We don't have a whole lot of time, but I wanted you to get a chance to tell your story real quick.
Oh, I just really appreciate the opportunity. I'm an ordained minister. I found the calling about 13 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and as you were saying, we don't choose God. God chooses us.
Right. So
and,
as a minister, you've got to be, flipping out. You're angry. You want to go and start a jihad against Martin Zender, right?
No, not at all.
I'm
singing
great.
His praises. I think you'll get a kick. I don't have a building. I have
mm-hmm.
people. We meet in parks
mm-hmm.
and different people's homes. And
very good.
But we call ourselves the Church of the Spiritual Health Intuitive Trinity. And when you break it down, the Spiritual Health Intuitive
mm-hmm.
Trinity, you
mm-hmm.
see what you have, the Church
yeah.
of Holy Shit. So... And what we do is we really look at speaking the truth, and the truth is we don't know anything, and we just accept that everything is out of our control. And as you were saying, and you reiterate that, in that we can't control our circumstances, and God controls them and has a plan, and we're just a part of this.
Well,
right.
Excellent stuff, Kate.
Thank you, Kate.
I appreciate so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. Appreciate
and
you.
It's not that we don't know anything, because
right.
God does give us knowledge, or else we wouldn't be talking about this.
Yeah.
I think what Kate meant was that knowledge he does give us tells us that we have no knowledge apart from him.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, and that's a very
well put. Here comes the train.
Okay,
here.
I can't wait. They're coming to pick up Martin Zender for the
They're coming for me. It's the 10:05 right on.
You know, the thing about it, though, you know, you look at another analogy that pops up all the time in the Bible, and it's men being sheep. And I think the reason for that is sheep are just really, really stupid. They're lovable, but they're dumb. I mean, sheep are just idiots. And you know, I mean, this is something that you've told me time and time again. And it's a good point that needs to be stressed. You know, all things are possible with God. Nothing is possible without him. And you know, to boil it down simply, I think that's one way to do it.
Well, it's a real hit to the human pride, and that's why people rebel against this truth. People always say, well, if what you're saying is true, Martin, then we're robots. And they really get mad at that we're robots. And I said, you know, it's worse than that. You're giving yourself too much credit. Scripture says we're clay.
Yeah, we don't even have any...
We don't even have any blinking parts or mechanical arms or, you know...
We're not
you're what's worse. Yeah. And, you know, and the Greek word for clay is mud.
Yeah, we can't even be salvaged for scrap.
No, that's right.
No,
that's we can't be done with. We cannot be done with the show already. We've got much more to say.
Hey, well, we'll have you back next week if you make time.
But we'll have to consider that. There's going to be have people check in on the website next week. There'll be some changes.
Sounds good. MartinZender.com and Martin Zender. I love you, buddy. God bless.
Thanks, Frank.
Folks, we'll see you tomorrow when Ralph Epperson joins us on the program.